All right, you look a little angelic.
Dude, thank you.
But I think it works because we're in Final Fantasy and there's angels. There's not. Are there? No, there was an angel.
Sephiroth has wings, doesn't he?
I don't even know who Sephiroth is. Is that the one who looks like Sorin?
Which Sorin? The Sorin Planeswalker or Sorin from Kingdom Hearts?
There's a Sorin in Kingdom Hearts?
Isn't that the main guy's name, Sorin with the Keyblade?
Is that his name? I don't know.
Or is it Sora? I don't know. I haven't played enough Super Smash Brothers with the new DLC that he's to know.
Final Fantasy is in Kingdom Hearts, right? That's how it is?
Yes, it's like a universe within a universe.
Okay.
Dude, we're going to piss so many people off.
That's where Final Fantasy came from, right? From Kingdom Hearts,
you know,
from
how
the
like
Disney
Mickey
video game?
Mouse and like Goofy are in Kingdom Hearts.
Right. So are these Final
they
Fantasy
create,
characters.
Yeah, the Final Fantasy characters. I don't know that that's true.
No, I'm not. Final Fantasy definitely came before.
Final Fantasy characters are in Mario Hoops 3-on-3.
So they're Mario characters.
These
are the best Mario characters.
Vivi is a Mario character.
Okay. We're talking about Super Smash Bros. Characters today.
Yeah, that's what it is. What's the best Super Smash Bros. Character?
Are we ready to start?
Let's start.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, I'm about to go turn the volume on Cam down just a little bit, and we're talking about Final Fantasy characters in CEDH. Which one's best?
We're talking about a lot more than just characters. We got spells and lands and all kinds of different shenanigans going on.
Everything from Final Fantasy, how good is that stuff translating into CEDH?
Into the format that we talk about every week.
We're not talking about Legacy. We're not talking about Standard. We're not talking about even Casual Commander here. We're talking about efficiency and CEDH.
And if you came for any of that stuff, be ready to change what you're looking for.
Perfect. That should be good. Okay.
Great. Okay. Let's do this.
We're talking about Final Fantasy in Magic the Gathering. It's here. The set is here. Not only is there a set, there's Commander products. All that's lumped together for us. That's all the same. Oh, that's all Final Fantasy.
This is just like our normal standard set review episodes that we're going to be doing.
Don't say standard.
Oh, right, because we're not talking about standard.
Our normal CEDH set
But for
reviews.
A normal set release,
yeah.
This is the first Universes Beyond one that's getting the whole actual playable in all formats treatment.
Is that true?
Yeah, that is.
Final Fantasy is the first standard legal to all the way back Universes Beyond in completion set.
That is correct, because the closest that we've gotten was...
We got Lord of the Rings, but that was modern only.
Because that also not only had a draftable set, but it also did have commander decks that came along with it. But you're right, it was modern only.
And then Assassin's Creed was like, it was a set, but it wasn't standard and it was very tiny, right?
A much more tiny set, that was only for... Constructed older Eternal
Have we
formats.
Had other Universes Beyond sets? Just those two. Those are the only ones that are coming to mind right now that are full Universes Beyond. It doesn't matter. We're talking about Final Fantasy here today.
No, I think you're right. I think you are right, yeah.
And this is the first standard legal. The standard part isn't relevant for us, but these cards were designed with the intent of being legal and standard, not the Commander Deck ones, the regular ones.
Which I think shows because we got a lot more pushed stuff than I think we normally do in sets where they're not necessarily trying to make Universes Beyond be something that you see regularly in Vintage and Legacy.
That's true, but I don't think that was the intent for this one. The intent for this one was standard playability.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I misunderstood you entirely.
I think what I meant is that like they didn't want many cards from Lord of the Rings to make an impact in Eternal formats because they want to keep them like magic related. They didn't want like Frodo coming in and like working super well with Black Lotus. Orcish Bowmaster is fine because orcs are everywhere. That's just kind of generically flavored so that way any set could have Orcish Bowmaster so long as orcs are native to the plane that you're on. But this set is different, where they want it to impact every single format of Magic.
Yeah.
So they are going to push more cards for constructed formats.
I think that's partially true, but it's a standard set. Like, they have to make sure that it's not too powerful, right? Because otherwise it'll break standard. Like, I get what you're saying, that they want these cards to see play, but I don't think they're making, like, Modern and Legacy power cards for a standard set. It has to be standard playable.
I guess I'm just comparing it to, like, Fallout and to, like, the... I guess the only other other sets that we've had that have been Universes Beyond or Lord of the Rings and Assassin's Creed. I feel like in general, there's more stuff that we have here that we can talk about than we have had from a lot of the other Universes Beyond stuff. Like Doctor Who didn't really bring us a lot of cards.
Sure.
Fallout didn't really bring us a lot of cards.
I agree with you there, yeah.
But they also weren't up to the same scale. So I guess I don't really have a lot to pick from in order to find evidence for what I'm claiming.
And a good chunk of the cards that we're talking about today are from the Commander decks too.
There is some stuff that we've already talked about that's from the Commander sets on the show that we're not going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about Lifestream's Blessing and Snort and Bugenhagen because we already talked about them and we found better cards to talk about anyway.
And those cards probably not going to be good.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's get started, should we?
It's about time, yeah.
Okay, great.
All right, so I have them sorted by artist.
Okay, why?
Because I didn't like the order of things of going, do you want to talk about like 50 creatures and then two sorceries, one instant, and then three lands? I didn't like that order. I didn't like the order of things if we went alphabetically either because then we're just talking about cards we already talked about to start off with.
What about color? You don't want to do color?
No, because it had that same problem. Like, okay. Let's start off with a bunch of cards we already talked about on the show. Whereas if we start off with the Magali Villeneuve cards.
Magali's great. Wonderful talented
Magali's
artist.
Magali's great. Yeah. We get to talk about Emmett Schlett of the Third Seat first.
Sure. I can dig it. I don't give a shit at all what order we talk about them. So this is great. Yeah.
You don't give an Emmett Schlett what order we talk about them
I
in.
I don't.
All right. Well, we have a lot of cards to read that have a ton of text. So I'm going to read quickly
today.
We can
go back and forth if you want.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Let's do that.
We'll switch it up.
Change
this time.
It up.
I'll do the next one.
Thank you. Yeah. This is two, a blue and a black for a 3/4 legendary elder wizard that says spells you cast from your graveyard cost two less to cast, and whenever one or more opponents lose life, you can cast target instant or sorcery from your graveyard. If that spell would be put into your graveyard, exile it, and you can only do this once each turn.
Yeah, this is kind of like Kess. That was the original reason I put it on here, and it's a little bit worse than Kess because it's not in red, but it allows you to cast things from your graveyard. The added bonus is the stuff you cast from your graveyard is two less to cast, which means even things like Demonic Tutor, now you can Demonic Tutor twice for only two mana. No, that's not true. For three mana total. Two mana for the original and then one from your graveyard.
As you flash it back with this.
As you flash it back with this. So three, then when you turn Demonic Tutor into one extra mana to do it again, to me, that feels really, really powerful. Now, you do have to connect, right? Deals, or you don't even have to connect. They just, when your opponents lose life, you may cast an instant or sorcery from your graveyard. So you can even trigger this on your opponent's turn?
Yeah, so like, I feel like Talion stuff, like Bloodchief Ascension, if you can get stuff that can consistently deal damage to your opponents, just so that you can make sure that you're doing that, I think that's pretty good.
And even like when your opponents attack each other, like they're going to attack each other. Okay, when you attack each other, I'm going to flash back my bounce spell or whatever. I don't know. If you're in blue-black, you're already competing with not only all of the other blue-black commanders, but all of the other three and four color pairings that also play blue-black, but get to basically, for free because of the mana bases, splash extra colors. So that's really tricky. If this is going to be good enough, I don't know.
It's a worse Obnixilis and a better color combination because like you kind of do want the same kind of things. Like maybe some of the same creatures that Obnixilis plays in black that allow you to deal damage on everyone's turn.
Sure.
So that every turn you can get something from the graveyard. The cost reduction makes me want things that cost like two generic and a color pip in my graveyard, which are a lot of times like game-winning spells. Like if my intuition
Adnaz,
if my intuition gets countered later, I have the ability to get a one mana intuition onto the stack, which is pretty nice.
The only thing that really holds this one back is it's a little bit slow, and at four mana, you need to then do something else, and then it doesn't make the thing for free. You still need more mana after that. So in order to get this to trigger right away, you have to already have something that's dealing damage in play, four mana for this, and then available mana afterwards, as well as something in your graveyard if you want to get the value for it right away, which feels like a lot of hoops to get it going. But if you just play Magic, those things might just happen, right?
You may cast it from your graveyard. So you have to cast it right then, right?
Right then, I think.
You have to cast it right then, and you have to pay its cost.
Yeah, you can.
Can you overload Cyclonic Rift from your graveyard with this?
Oh, I don't know. Overload is a casting
cost. It doesn't, like,
cost.
Give it flashback. Like, the reason why you can't do that with Snapcaster Mage is because it gives it flashback, where flashback is equal to its mana value, so you have to do its front side. But because it just says, I may cast it, can I do any mode of it?
I think, especially because you're not casting it for free. Normally, if you cast it for free,
Bingo. You
have to cast it, like, as is. Like, you can't switch the mode. But all you have to do is cast it, and Overload is a... It's like an alternate casting cost.
Here's something that sounds really cool to me. With my commander in play, let's say I have a Force of Will in my graveyard.
Yeah.
And someone tries to Force of Will something, and they lose a life to cast the Force of Will. So now that triggers Emmett Schlett of the third seat, and that means that I can cast an instant or sorcery from my graveyard then.
Your Force of Will that's already there.
So can I pitch a blue card from my graveyard, pay a life, cast the Force of Will from my graveyard to protect my win condition now?
I think so.
Because that sounds like that a sounds funny good. Situation that can come up.
We should look into the... Should we look? Can we find that out now?
No. No, because I bet that there's no gatherer text for any of these because no one's gotten to play these cards, so no one knows the questions to ask yet. But we do.
You're right.
Normally, it's too early for these to come out.
I think you can, because all it says is you're casting it. It doesn't change the cost. It doesn't give it any ability to be cast for something else. It doesn't do any of those other stuff that are normally what's stopping it. So I want to say that you can, but this card goes from like pretty good to maybe a little bit more than decent. Like I said before, there's a lot of other things that are competing for the same territory, so it's hard to say if this is going to be the best one there.
Like, but this isn't necessarily a good situation to be in, like having a counter spell and bounce spell that you have to keep reusing because people are causing problems all the time.
They exile them with Emmett as you do the flashback, as you cast
but like that means that you still had to use two Force of Wills, the one from your hand that you cast and then the one that you flash back, right? Yeah. The Cyclonic Rift that you use from your hand and then the one that you flash back, basically, right? Like, you have to be dealing with so many things in order for this to be getting that kind of value. So it is definitely set up better for the long game.
And I think also it just works better with just like tutors, with finishers, with Demonic Tutor and Grim Tutor. And just like the fact that you can cast them for cheaper from your graveyard. Turn all of your tutors into two tutors.
Here's another question I have. Deck. This gets around timing restrictions?
No. Because Shit.
So like if my opponent Force of Will's my thing, can I Demonic Tutor?
I want to say no.
Because I'm casting
you're
it.
You're casting it. You have to
and
pay the mana for
free.
It.
If
it's
it
not
was
for
cast
free.
It without paying its mana cost, it would ignore timing restrictions.
Like Dothy Voidwalker, because like Dothy, you're doing it for free with Dothy, so Dothy changes how you're allowed to
do
it.
No, Dothy requires you to follow timing restrictions. You can't just like Ranger Captain of Eos whenever you want.
Oh, that's true.
So because I'm casting it, is that why?
I don't think we know enough.
Cut!
Got all that.
Okay, so just to clarify, Emmett does actually get around timing restrictions. We'll figure this out a little bit later, but because Dothy Voidwalker says until end of turn you can cast those spells, that's why Dothy has to follow timing restrictions. But Emmett makes you cast the instant or sorcery the second that his ability resolves, which is why he can get around those timing restrictions, and you can Demonic Tutor at instant speed. Now, Emmett also just lets you cast spells from your graveyard, so that means that it's not giving it like a flashback ability the way that Snapcaster Mage does, so you can use alternate cost, like Force of Wills pitching a card and losing a life alternate cost, which is super cool. So we were right about that. We'll actually figure out this Emmett situation a little bit later, but now that that's clear, let's get back to the podcast. Emmett Schlett is fighting for a spot amongst a billion Dimir commanders that do card advantage things. This reminds me of like Gale, Waterdeep, Prodigy, and the Throne of the whatever it is, like those kind of things. So I don't think it's something that you'll see often, but it is something cool that you could do.
Sure. Should we talk about another card?
Let's move on and talk about Yshtola, Knight's Blessed.
Another card that was probably competing with a similar space that this past commander was. One, a white, a blue, and a black for a legendary creature, Cat Warlock, 2/4 with Vigilance. At the beginning of each end step, if a player lost 4 or more life this turn, you draw a card. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell with mana value 3 or greater, Yshtola deals 2 damage to each opponent and you gain 2 life. This card does a lot of things we've talked about, a lot of things that this card could do. I don't know that Curiosity is one of them.
We got a lot of people that reminded us that Curiosity works pretty well because even on like your opponent's turns, if you trigger it, you can still draw a card, so it's always replacing.
Yeah, which I get spells. That just, I don't want to not only have to play expensive things, but then those cards are only really relevantly great when I have my curiosity on them.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
But I do think that grinding into a late game is one of them.
Yeah, I think that's something that this deck would be able to do really strongly. I wasn't necessarily thinking like Force of Will and Force of Negation are things that will trigger Yshtola that I don't really have to spend any mana on.
Right, yeah, those are great ones.
Yeah, so there are already cards that are good in CEDH that this works pretty well with.
Yeah.
If Yshtola let me replace the card already, I think it'd be a little bit better. Like what Glarb does, letting you cast it from the top of your library, kind of lets it be card advantage that way. And Yashola doesn't make it natural card advantage that way.
That's what I mean, that I don't think the curiosity is the way to go, because you need to get not only play those expensive things, but also find the curiosity. Whereas Glarb, all you need is a couple expensive things, and Glarb by itself helps that. Yashola by herself doesn't do anything with expensive things. The extra damage is nice, but only sometimes will that lead to a card draw. It won't always lead to a card draw. And then if you have the curiosity also, then it's great. And yes, that Force of Will, pitching a card, drawing three cards, yes, that is good. But at that point, if I'm looking for two specific cards like curiosity and a free spell, I'd rather look for Thoracle and Consult, right? Like if I'm doing that and you're in Esper, so you don't have, not that any color has great ways to find enchantments, you have black cards, so you do have kind of the best ways to find enchantments. But
and you have Enlightened Tutor.
If you're tutoring, you should just tutor for a piece that's a win on its own, Aristic Study or a win condition, right? Like tutoring for the curiosity just to then turn on your other stuff.
Yeah, I'd rather find Rhystic Study as a card advantage engine instead of an aura that's going to allow for a billion things to go wrong.
And I think for some reason we're like a little bit extra critical on this card because it's a little bit extra hyped, and I think maybe we just don't see it. Maybe once we play against this card a couple times, we'll see it more.
Well, this also was like one of the first cards that we got to see from the set, so we've had a long time to think about it. And I think realistically what happened was that the set showed us a lot of better commanders that we just didn't know about when we first got to see this card. So if you want to hear us talk more about this card, go check out the Top 10 Esper Decks episode that we put out last week, because I don't think we need to spend too much more time talking about this commander that I don't think we like too much.
That sounds great. We haven't rated these two.
No, we haven't.
Do you want to?
No.
All right.
It's too late now. Celeste, Rune Knight, is another commander that we've already talked about, but this is one and Mardu for a 4-4 legendary human wizard knight that when it enters lets you discard any number of cards, then draw that many cards, plus one, and whenever one or more other creatures you control enter, if one or more of them entered from a graveyard or was cast from a graveyard, put a plus one counter on each creature you control. Tyler played this deck on our gameplay episode, which just came out last week, and it did a lot of cool things that we didn't necessarily talk about the first time that we talked about Celeste on the show. I talked a little bit more about the persist creature.
Yeah.
There's already loops with like Altar of Dementia and Goblin Bombardment as like other sacrifice outlets that you can use so that you can basically like just keep getting creatures back that don't necessarily need to be a big clunky goblin.
Murderous Redcap.
Yeah, Murderous. Thank you. I never remember the name of that card. But instead you can play cards that are going to be like actively a little bit better and cheaper in your deck instead.
Yeah, stuff like Stitcher Supplier that by itself kind of fills up your graveyard. I think Tyler wasn't playing any persist cards, but he did mention that if you're going to play one, Murderous Redcap is probably the one that you would play just because it actually is a win condition on its own. But otherwise, the persist creatures, they don't actually do anything. You can loop them forever, but you still need another piece. Celeste seems really great. It's a great way to fill the graveyard. I feel like it competes with stuff like Diada, where you're doing very similar things. It's hard to say which one's better. They feel very close, but they both fill the graveyard. They both help you win with Underworld Breach. The only issue with Celeste off the bat, and proved to not really be that much of an issue, is Celeste is drawing cards, which means you're particularly weak to Orcish Bowmaster, whereas Diada is just milling cards over.
That's true.
So you avoid that one little thing. But Celeste also doesn't care about Bowmaster, because if you kill Celeste, then you get to just cast Celeste over again. If you kill the other things, most of them, you would want them in the graveyard anyway. So
was there any point in the game, I'm just realizing now,
yeah,
that I don't think we cared about Celeste's other ability at all. Was there ever a point where Tyler cast a creature with Underworld Breach while Celeste was in play, and all of his creatures should have gotten plus one counters?
I think, no. I think by the time he was winning the game with Stitcher Supplier, Celeste wasn't even out anymore. And if it was, all that would do is Stitcher Supplier would enter with a plus one counter, and then he would just sack the Stitchers right away.
Because Altar of Dementia mills for mana value, not for power.
No, power. It's power, yeah. So okay, he would mill two more cards.
It would be a little bit easier to win the game.
I guess it would make it more infinite somehow. It would make the loop, like, it's still infinite,
wow,
even with seven
so
cards,
yeah,
right?
I guess maybe if, like, you're behind or if there's something that, like, sets you back, maybe,
but
maybe that's good.
I think
good,
when we were playing, I'll have to double check. I don't think Celeste was out at the time.
All right. Well, either way, I think Celeste is good and better than either of the other commanders that we've talked about so far.
I think so. Although it's always tough because, like, Consultation, white decks, like Esper is just a better color pairing than Mardu in a lot of ways, but
I guess that's true. Yeah,
Mardu still has a lot of gas and has been getting a lot of stuff recently. Although today we're going to talk about a lot more blue cards than we're going to talk about red, white, or black cards.
I guess that's true. Do you want to talk about another blue card next?
Emmett Selch, unsun. That's probably a real word that I'm having a hard time with it. Unsundered. Emmett Selch, Unsunderered. For one, a blue and a black, you get a legendary creature, Eldrazi Wizard, that's a 2/4 with vigilance. When Emmett enters or attacks, draw a card, then discard a card. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if there are 14 or more cards in your graveyard, Emmett transforms into an Avatar 6/6 with vigilance. That's a legendary creature still, and has Echo of the Last. During your turn, you may play cards from your graveyard. If a card or token would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So this is basically like a Yawgmoth's Will in the command zone that you have to really fight for.
Yeah, and it's very telegraphed at the same time in a color combination that like is still missing a couple of things that you really want in your Underworld Breach Yawgmoth decks.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I wonder if it's something that could go in the 99 of certain decks. I don't think so, but its effect is super powerful, just a little bit too many hoops. If you wanted to make Emmett happen, I'm sure that you could win 20% of your games with a deck like this. I think there are probably better options.
Yeah, it's probably pretty easy to put 14 cards into your graveyard if you're trying really hard. The bummer part is that you have to cast Emmett and then pass, and then he'll flip over into Hades. Is he better than the other version of Emmett that we already talked about?
I like the other one more. The other one looks more like Kess to me, and I like the play style of Kess. Although it's tricky because this Emmett allows you to play everything from your graveyard, where this other Emmett only lets you play one thing for turn.
And only instants and sorceries.
And only instants and sorceries. So technically, like, the ability on the other one is more just, it's just less hoops that you have to jump through. It feels like to me it's less hoops that you have to jump through on our first Emmett that just has to deal damage. And then all you have to do is cast a spell, and you can cast it again from your graveyard then. You don't have to fill your graveyard to 14 cards just to deal damage. You can
that
just
attack. Other Emmett has to get around timing restrictions, because when you deal combat damage, like, you're never going to be able to target a sorcery. You would have to cast it right as it deals damage. So you would never be able to use a sorcery when you deal combat damage. It would always have to be an instant that you get.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say you may cast it this turn. It does say you may cast it. So how does a tally read? It's probably just like a tally.
A tally, I think, just says you may cast those cards.
But Atali says without paying mana cost, and that's the part that we're unsure of right now, if that makes a difference. But I don't think that it... Because why does Atali get to ignore timing restrictions, but Dothy doesn't? Dothy says you may play it this turn without paying its mana cost. I think that this turn means that the timing restrictions are still relevant. Whereas Atali says you have to cast it right now. And since you have to cast it right now as part of the ability, I think that you are correct. Sorcery rules do not apply.
That makes sense, yeah. Because you can't wait to cast them later this turn. Timing restrictions based on card types are ignored is part of Atali's gatherer text.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So yeah, okay, that's why. So because you have to do it right away with the other Emmett, then you can Demonic Tutor at instant speed.
Which is really good.
All of a sudden, this Emmett Schlett sucks, and the other Emmett Schlett's way better all of a sudden.
Yeah, Emmett Schlett of the third seat is the one that we think is much better.
Yeah, put him up to the first seat, because all of a sudden he's much better now.
Yeah, and especially you don't have to wait until your next upkeep, which is like the worst lines on a Magic card ever, because that just doesn't happen. The effect is too strong that you'll never get there, or it will be too hard to get set up properly by then.
And Unsunderd is a stupid name.
Unsunderered, I think, is a stupid name. I agree.
Let's move on. I don't even want to talk about him anymore.
Is it my turn or your turn to talk
about
a card?
It's my turn to talk about a card.
You'd say the cool one.
We got Traveling Chocobo.
I've been saying like Chocobo.
But it's all O's, though.
You're right. That's true.
It's 2 and a green for a 3/2 bird. You can look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play lands and cast bird spells from the top of your library. And if a land or bird you control entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time.
I think this will mainly see play in casual commander decks. I think this is going to be a great Lands Matters card. But I do think there's some implication for CDH with things like Tatiova, which is a pretty fringe deck, but I think like if you are playing CDH Tatiova, this card is absolutely cracked in a deck like that.
Because it just doubles your Tatiova
triggers.
Doubles your Tatiova
trigger.
Right,
Lumra,
yeah,
is another one that has a lot of things that are going to get double triggers from this. This is a great Lumra
like
card.
A great Lumra card.
If you're playing Derevi, I wonder if this is a Derevi card because birds, because doubling Derevi triggers sounds great. I don't know if that's enough. You already play Delny, which not only doubles your Derevi triggers, but doubles other triggers too. But Traveling Chocobo, how did you say it?
Chocobo.
I think maybe it's he's playing Derevi. Maybe.
This one only working with lands and birds makes it a little bit awkward.
Maybe it doesn't make the final cut, but I think it's something. I think Derevi players are at least going to look at something. Anything that doubles the Derevi trigger,
yeah,
look at it, right?
I think Lumra's a little bit more excited.
Because Lumra plays all the Lotus Cobra type things. Anything that when it enters, you make something a valuable resource like mana or a treasure.
Whoa,
or
yeah.
Anything like
doubling
that.
Any of like their Lotus Cobra effects, because they play multiple multiple types of Lotus Cobras and stuff.
And this is just going to be a second one a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think stuff like that is going to be really good. The Valley Flood Caller stuff, like, this untapping doesn't really do too much, but like if you're still trying to do stuff with Valley Flood Caller and untapping
birds,
it happens
to be a bird, sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, yep. I think that this might be looking at there, but yeah. I like it for casual a little bit more.
Why doesn't the bird fly? I guess it's like an ostrich type.
It's like an ostrich type. You know, I bet if I knew anything about Final Fantasy, do you know, I've seen in other art humans riding on the backs of these like they're horses.
Okay.
So I think these are more like an ostrich
land
that
yeah.
are used for human riding.
Also, just like looking at the top card of your library and being able to play lands from the top of your library, that Glarb text, that's going to be helpful and relevant, and you're going to be able to use fetch lands to reset the top of your library, look again, get a land. Like, it's not going to be the most powerful part about this card, but that'll certainly come up and
it's
be helpful.
Extra upside for the decks that already want it. I would not look at that and go, oh, this is good for a deck.
If you're already playing it for that double ability.
It's like maybe sometimes. Yeah,
it'll be helpful.
It'll give you an extra upside, but don't look at that and go, oh, I'm going to put this in my... in my Kenrith deck now.
Because of the land thing.
Yeah.
Certainly not. No. And even like, especially with the Lumer types, like Lumer plays things like Exploration that allows you to play extra land drops in a turn.
Yeah.
So that will be especially great with Chocobos that you can
Chocobos.
That'll be especially great with Chocobo because you can play the extra land drops on the top and just keep on moving.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's a maybe.
Kefka Court Mage is our next card.
Nate played this one.
Nate did play this one. This is for 2, a blue, a black, and a red. A legendary creature, human wizard that's a 4/5 that says whenever Kefka enters or attacks, each player discards a card. Each player is you two. Then you draw a card for each card type among cards discarded this way. And it also has, for 8 mana, each opponent sacrifices a permanent of their choice. Transform Kefka, activate only as a sorcery, which particularly sucks because this all part is not going to be the CDH part, I think, a ton, because spending 8 mana to do something like this and then someone just like hits your Kefka and blows you out is going to be terrible. But this backside is insane. If you get to Kefka, Ruler of Ruin, you get a Avatar Wizard flying 5/7 that says whenever an opponent loses life during your turn, you draw that many cards, which means if you connect with Kefka, you draw 5 cards right away. If that happens, holy hell, you're going to be living high. But I think really the interesting part about Kefka for CDH is that on enters and attacks, you're forcing your opponents to continually discard cards and at the same time filling your own cards. Probably netting 1 or 2 cards is going to be the average. Since you have to discard a card, your opponents are able to communicate a little bit on what cards they discard, but you also hear them communicate, so you get to decide if they're telling before you decide. I think it's safe to say that you draw like 2 cards a turn, so this is kind of like a Crom. You just don't get the Timna along with it. And the discard that from your opponents that you get to give them can be really helpful. It can be wonderful. If they have Mulligan, it can really like help shut your opponents down, but it can also help feed their Underworld Breach or something like that, so it can be a downside.
It just like lets you attack on a different axis that you normally don't get to in Grixis, and just lets you be a little bit more slow, grind a little bit more, which I think is kind of nice, and take advantage of other engines like Waste Knot to help you get like additional cards, like we saw in the gameplay episode when Nate piloted this deck. So it can do a lot of cool things. I don't think it's going to be better than Rog'Sai, but it's at least another, you know, more grindy Grixis option that you have out there. And if you do flip it and you get there, tell me, because that sounds like that'd be pretty crazy.
Yeah, if you're playing anything like Tevish Crom, this will be very similar to, or even like the bird, the parrot and Crom, if anyone's still on that.
Oh, I Francisco, feel
like
yeah.
Francisco Crom. I feel like those type of decks are going to feel a little bit similar to Kefka. So yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to play a little bit better than it reads. I think 5 mana for this effect looks like shit, but I think in the right hands, I think this is a great politicking tool. Your opponent's going down on cards. If you can capitalize on that and like control like the card advantage, I think this could be something.
Just don't put a lot of cards in your deck that rely on your opponents to lose life on your turn, because you're never going to flip them. All right, the next card is another one that we've talked about last week. This is Noctis, Prince of Lucis. This is 1 in Esper for a 4/3 legendary human noble with lifelink, and you may cast artifact spells from your graveyard by paying 3 life in addition to paying their other cost. If you cast a spell this way, that artifact enters with a finality counter on it.
We've already talked about some of the lines with this one involving Mox Diamond and Aetherflux Reservoir.
There's other Aetherflux Reservoir stuff that you can do too. What's the
Chalice of the Void?
Yeah, Chalice of the Void, and like any other 0 mana rock, you can just keep casting from your graveyard and letting it get countered.
The thing that we're looking for with this commander is an artifact that you're casting but never enters the battlefield. So with Chalice out, anything that you cast at 0 gets countered and goes right to the graveyard, but you're still casting it, which means Aetherflux triggers, which means that your commander doesn't put the finality counter on it because it doesn't actually enter, because it enters with the finality counter.
So that way, even though you lose 3 life every every time you recast the zero mana artifact, you gain incrementally.
One, then two, then three, then four, then five, then six, and seven. And then
over and over with until you can just fire in your laser at the whole table with the Aetherflux Reservoir.
The only issue that I have, and it's kind of a big issue with Noctis, is that that's the only thing that this does. It doesn't actually provide any real advantage on its own. You could use Baubles over and over again in the meantime, I guess. That doesn't really seem like a lot. And you only get to do it once for each Bauble. You don't get to reuse them or anything
that's also
like that.
True. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that are really hyped for this card. I just haven't seen it yet. So I'm gonna wait for those people to prove me wrong before I change my opinion on it.
Did we rate this one lower than Xur in our Esper?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I still feel that. I think it's worse than Xur.
I think it's definitely worse than Xur.
This one's better than Xur.
Oh, the next card?
Yeah, the next card that we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Take it away, Dylan.
Terra Magical Adept has
so
many words.
You're getting all of the two-sided cards with all the words.
So many words on the back that are irrelevant. This is for one, a red and a green, a legendary creature, human wizard warrior. It's a Najeela card? What? No. This is
shit.
When it enters, mill five cards. Put up to one enchantment card milled this way into your hand. So I played this card. There's more that does. I just want to pit stop real quick and say that you could build this deck into an Enchantress-style deck. I'm not doing that. You can find Underworld Breach or Food Chain with this card, which is kind of what I'm looking for.
We don't even have to know what the rest of the card does to know that this works with Food Chain.
Right, yeah. So basically, once you have the Food Chain loop of Food Chain with Squee, but also the other one, Eternal Scourge, you can create infinite creature mana, cast this card over and over again, mill your entire library, get all the enchantments back. One of those enchantments could be Underworld Breach, or it could be cards that I have already outclassed from my list, like Overlord of the Balemurk, which is both an enchantment and a creature that mills four and allows you to get a non-avatar creature back from your graveyard to your hand.
There's a Manticore that does a very similar thing that costs a little bit less than the Overlord that might be a little bit more efficient in the deck, but there's definitely like a lot of options that you have.
I think it's a black and a green and a generic for an enchantment creature.
Yeah,
I forget what it's called. Grist something.
It's not a Grist. It's a Manticore.
Gloom Shrieker is the name of the card. It allows you to, when it enters, get a permanent back from your graveyard, and that permanent can be Thassa's Oracle. You could also have the enchantment's god Purphoros, which is also an enchantment and a creature that you can cast with the Food Chain mana and then just continue your loop.
You know, that's kind of nice because then you don't have to play Thassa's Oracle in the deck.
You kind of want to play Thassa's Oracle. we could also talk about the backside of what this card is or the rest of the text on it. It's a 4/2 on the front, but it has trance, and for 4, a red and a green, you can tap it, exile Terra, then return it to the battlefield transformed under its owner's control, activated only as a sorcery, and it does some stuff that is not great for this format. It is a legendary enchantment creature saga wizard with flying as a 6/6, and Esper Terra, which is not an Esper card, has several saga lore abilities on the backside. 1, 2, and 3 are all the same. They say create a token that's a copy of a non-legendary enchantment you control. It gains haste. If it's a saga, put up to 3 lore counters on it. Sacrifice it at the beginning of your next end step. I think the goal here is that this is like a saga card. This like works well with sagas or something.
That's a theme in the draft set.
Right, yeah. So, but we're not doing anything with that. I think there's also something that you can do with Spark Double on the backside where you can create infinite.
Honestly,
something.
If you're trying to do something with the backside, I think you're building this deck in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I don't like it for those things. The 6 mana to flip it, we're not doing that. And then the fourth ability, which like theoretically would be cool if you ever got there. I don't know if you would. Add white, blue, black, red, green, and exile Esper Terra, then return it to the battlefield. This is what makes the card 5 colors. For Commander, for some reason, since it has the actual pip and it's not a reminder text, this card is now a 5-color identity card, which flavor-wise, I think is stupid. I agree. But for CDH and structurally wise, I think it's great because now I can play this card as a 5-color good stuff Food Chain commander, and I think it's much better than Food Chain First Sliver, which I was not a big fan of before.
Exactly. So we've seen this deck on the channel already. We've talked about it already. I think it's impressing me more than I thought that it would. This could be something that has some sort of long-term implication in CEDH. We'll see if that, you know, comes into TEDH at all, but
yeah,
at least it's something that's holding its own.
Yeah, Food Chain is a little bit tricky when it comes to TDH because Rhystic Study is its worst nightmare and Rhystic Study dominates the format right now. But it's also important to note that this card also specifically works really well with Underworld Breach, which is one of the best things that you can do in the format, that this with Essence Flux and Lion's Eye Diamond, you can infinitely mill your library.
Yeah, so if you play your Commander Terra, you mill 5 cards. Then if you are able to Essence Flux, you can mill another 5 cards. And if you have Lion's Eye Diamond, you only need 1 Lion's Eye Diamond to get 3 more Essence Fluxes from your graveyard. And each one of those Essence Fluxes is netting you 2 additional cards from your graveyard, which is 6 cards per Lion's Eye Diamond, which means that every time you cast Lion's Eye Diamond, then there's 3 additional cards in your graveyard then.
You don't end up netting a bunch of extra cards, but you do get to basically grind through your deck like you would with Grinding Station. Is that great? I'm not really sure. It's just something else you can do. I
think Essence Flux a better card to play than Grinding Station, whereas you might want Grinding Station normally. Like, this is like a little bit more efficient because there's a little bit extra value that
it's a blue card.
A blue card can get you in your deck.
And then just the fact that, like, it just makes Underworld Breach good. If you have to cast Terra, now there's 5 cards in your graveyard. You're playing 5 color good stuff. One of them is going to be castable. If you can find Underworld Breach, now your Breach without any setup is going to be really great, probably, which is helpful, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's Terra. I don't have anything else to say about Terra.
Great. We should move on to the next card.
Let's talk about Vivi Ornateer. It's been a little while since we talked about Vivi. Vivi is 1, a red, and a blue for an 0/3 legendary wizard with the 0 ability that lets you add X mana in any combination of red and or blue, where X is Vivi's power, and activate only during your turn and once each turn. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Vivi, and it deals 1 damage to each opponent.
So the main thing that this one does is this one does work really well with curiosity effects.
This is a curiosity commander.
Because it says non-creature spell, which means 0 mana artifacts, which means anything that's not a creature, not just specifically 3 mana or higher.
So if you have Vivi with a curiosity on it and then you cast like a Mox Amber, Vivi deals 1 damage to each opponent and curiosity sees that 1 damage separately at each opponent, allowing you to draw 3 cards for your 1 card.
I think Vivi is going to be very strong, but a little bit fickle to get set up. You have to land your Vivi, you have to land your curiosity effect on the Vivi, and curiosity is the best one by a mile. The other ones are 2 and 3 mana and they're just a little bit more difficult to
obtain. It makes it way more clunky in that case then. I don't know that I piloted it great in the gameplay episode that we did. I was a little nervous to just like run out Vivi and then pass the turn and then hope that like the next turn I can start to get some counters and get going somewhere, because especially in a pod like that where like we're playing a bunch of commanders, no one knows how good they are, but Vivi already has the reputation for being super good. I know you and Tyler have had some experience playing against Vivi already, but I have not. So I felt like it was just a little bit clunky to set up like Vivi with Ophidian Eye and then try to do something else. You gotta make sure that you're mulliganing for these effects. Otherwise, Vivi alone isn't doing anything. You're gonna have scenarios where you're kind of like ramping to nowhere. And maybe I should be playing more of a storm build, but I also feel like playing, you know, cards that do things to help me win is better than just like playing a bunch of cantrips at the same time.
Definitely. I think Vivi is a little bit interesting because during the curiosity thing, Vivi draws you cards, but until then, Vivi only gives you mana. So you have to think of her as only mana until you get advantage. So as you're looking through opening hands, and you were doing this, you found Mystic Remora and then I Swan Songed it, but like you have to find another source of card advantage. That's not the curiosity effect. Like, you have to have that card advantage prior. I do think Vivi is kind of interesting because it also weirdly plays a little bit like Burgi, whereas Burgi, every time you cast a spell, you get a mana.
Yeah.
The same thing with Vivi, except you have to get that mana all at one burst. So you can't use those things to pay for each other back and forth. But I wonder if Vivi is a card that could make it into the 99 of decks like Blue Farm that is looking for this type of effect, that wants to play a couple spells, mix a mana. The idea of, like, playing this on turn 2 off of a rock, playing another rock, like a Mox Amber, triggering this, make a mana, use the Mox Amber that you make with this to cast Arcane Signet, and then pass a turn. So then for your next turn, you can punch the button again right away to make 1 mana, and you already have it. Like, or you can build it up to 2 or 3 and then punch it again. I don't know. It feels like a card that would be really great in a 99 of, like, a grindy deck that is just looking to, like, churn out some more mana.
For a little bit, Delny doubles the trigger as well, which, like, could be something.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So I think Vivi will see play as a commander. I don't know that it'll take over the format. I don't know that it's exactly like Nod, although it is kind of similar. It's not that same power level for sure. It doesn't have the effect that it refills your hand just when someone tries to get rid of it,
like,
right?
Curiosity in general is bad. Like, every single counterspell in the game hits it. It's an aura and has all of the downsides of it being an aura. So, like, there's definitely things that this deck is going to have to watch out for. So it's certainly not the new Nadu or anything, but it's one of these decks that, like, if it's allowed to get going, it can steamroll everything that's going on.
If you're playing a Blue Farm style of deck, if you're playing a slower-ish, or maybe not even slower, but just like more explosive style of blue-red deck rather than a turbo deck. Like, I don't know that this is great in a turbo strategy,
yeah.
But if you're playing that more mid-range hell, that's your spot, and you're in blue-red, I think Vivi could be an option for the 99, and then we'll also be like a fine commander.
Put it in Niv-Mizzet Perun. That's a cool spot.
Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Next card is Starting Town.
Ooh, a land.
A land. Probably, honestly, probably the best card of the set, quietly, which is like not flashy at all, but like realistically, I think this, and there's one other card that we're going to talk about in 2 seconds that is also probably one of the best cards in the set, but Starting Town is a land town that enters the battlefield tapped unless it's your first, second, or third turns of the game, which are the most important turns of CDH, taps to add a colorless mana, or you can tap it, pay one life, and add one mana of any color.
So its mana abilities alone have it as a better mana confluence, which is really nuts.
Yeah, it's kind of like Spire Industry, which also does a similar thing, but requires an artifact in play that you can either pay for colorless mana for no life loss, which will come up a reason about, or you can pay the one life for any color that you want.
It's kind of like they made a mana confluence in the style of the Fastlands from Scars of Mirrodin block,
yeah.
But instead of it being like you could play your third land on turn 5 and still have Darkslick Shores come into play untapped, this only comes into play untapped on turn 1, 2, or 3.
It's certainly more punishing if you miss your land drops in those early turns, because
yeah.
If you miss your land drop and it's turn 4 and this is your third land, it still comes untapped, which is going to be horrible.
Yeah, I think in the gameplay episode, Tyler equated it to Exotic Orchard, which kind of makes sense, except it's kind of like the opposite of Exotic Orchard, whereas Exotic Orchard you really don't want in your opening hand when you're going first. This is like the ideal turn 1 land, I would say,
right,
all the
time. 100%. So this is like when it's relevant in the beginning, early, important stage of the game, this is going to be an untapped mana of any color, which will be very helpful. But if you're looking to push into the late game, drawing this as like a top deck land is going to feel terrible. So yeah, you have to think about that when playing it. I don't know that this is a auto-include in every single deck, but I do think this is a land that's going to go in a lot of CDH decks.
I think the more turbo you are and the more colors you are, the more that you are going to want this.
Yeah, right? I'm thinking about this for Rog'Sai.
Honestly, this is probably one of the better lands you could have in Rog'Sai.
Right?
Because ideally you want the game over
right.
by turns 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
And it makes all of the mana that you could need. So the double blue pip issue that you have like can be fixed a little bit better just by like shoring up your mana base just that much more.
And it's going to be like strangely probably oftentimes irrelevant, but when I can cast a Soul Ring on turn 1 with this and pay no life to do it, that's going to feel great when I Necro later and get to go one card deeper because of it.
Yeah, that's a big thing when you're like, oh man, all my mana like is going to tap and deal me damage. Like this at least has the option to not have to do that.
Yeah, so I think it'll certainly see play a lot in a bunch of different decks.
I think so too.
This one, this next card, not so much.
This one's, not as much. Matoya Archon Elder is 2 and a blue for a 1/4 legendary human warlock, and whenever you surveil or scry, you draw a card. But you draw after you scry or surveil.
Right, so you still get to do that action first. It doesn't replace it. It adds it on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a replacement.
Specifically, how great with Thrasios, I suppose?
Oh, because you scry with Thrasios, and then you bottom it, and then you reveal a card and put that card into your hand,
and then you draw
and then
a card.
She triggers, and then she draws.
Right, yeah. So it kind of like doubles your Thrasios, sort of. It's a weird training ground, training center.
I was thinking that, it's like a really weird training grounds.
Biomancer
but
familiar
of,
type.
Yeah.
But instead for making it less, it just doubles what it does. So it kind of, for 4 mana, you would still get the same amount.
But also, you get less card selection that way, because at least like you get 2 scries out of Biomancer's familiar, if that's what you're you're doing.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't think so. But Rog Thrass, I wonder if they're looking to do something like this with Thrasios. I don't think so. But you never know. On its own, as a mono blue commander with all of the one mana scry type things, Preordain gets insane with something like this.
Yeah, I don't think my cantrips drawing me two cards makes this really good.
No, it's not exactly what I'm looking for. But it feels like weirdly close. I don't know. It just, whenever you draw a card unrestricted by amount of times you can do that per turn or whatever, that feels like something that I'm looking at.
Yeah,
whenever you game action, draw a card unrestricted the amount of times I can do this per turn.
Yes,
I want to look a little bit extra.
I just want the game action to be something that I'm already doing or I actively want to be doing because it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have enough of those cards that aren't bad without this card, Matoya, but that are extra good with it. And like having a Surveil land draw you a card is neat, but is that worth it?
When every deck plays one Surveil
not
land,
really.
Like, that's not going to do enough. The next card that we're going to talk about is going to do a lot more for you.
I think this card's going to be really good, yeah. Tataru
is how I would say it.
Tataru Taru is a 1 and a white, 0/3 legendary creature, dwarf advisor, that says when it enters, you draw a card, and target opponent may draw a card, which is lame, but it also has Scion Secretary that says whenever an opponent draws a card, if it isn't that player's turn, like for what just happened, you create a tapped treasure token. This ability only triggers once each turn.
What a weird little Lotho
that has a ton of restrictions, and I still think is going to be all right. When it enters right away, you draw a card and your opponent draws a card, which, yes, that is going to be bad. I think there's a non-zero amount of times your opponent is going to decline the draw because they don't want to give you the treasure. I can picture moments where I'm playing Sissei and my opponents go, don't give him the treasure, don't take the card, and they go, all right, I won't take the card. Like, there is a world where that could be the case, a rare world, but it's something to think about. And the fact that it can trigger once each turn is not like once each player each turn. It's once each turn. Once it triggers from player A doing that effect on their turn, when player B would trigger it again, you don't get another one, right? So at most, this is getting you 1, 2, 3, 4 treasures before it gets back to you, and then you get to untap.
I think it's almost going to be guaranteed to get you a treasure upon enters, because
yeah, most players are taking that draw 99.9%
exactly.
of the time, right?
It's a tapped treasure. So that's another big difference, is that like Lotho lets you use the mana that you get it right away, but this is something that you won't have access to until you're next turn. But I mean, she hasn't just died a Bowmaster, which is also super nice,
which is relevant. She's a little bit easier to cast, I think, and she doesn't die to Bowmaster than Lotho. Lotho's effect is, I don't want to say strictly better, but it's better in like almost every measurable way, right?
For arguably being one mana, draw a card, give your opponent a card, and then you'll get more mana later. This seems like a really solid engine. Really easy to get on turn one.
Sissei is the main deck that I'm thinking about for this card. I think this is almost an auto include in Sissei. I think it being a legend is huge. I think it being able to make upwards of 4 mana a turn cycle for Sissei in particular is going to be huge. I wonder, like, if I have the Emil with infinite mana loop, I could loop this to draw my deck. My opponent would also draw a deck, but if I have Bowmaster out, they're already dead because I can just flicker Bowmaster.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if that's ever going to be relevant, that I could flicker with Emil to draw extra cards. And sometimes it might be. Someone's winning the game. Hey, let's look for some cards. I'll have you draw a card if you find a counterspell.
Dude,
let's counter this
card. You and someone who's not winning the game get
right?
to draw.
And like you already
Why
have
don't
Emil
you just
out.
Win the game
Why
then,
don't
though?
You just win the game out? Exactly. Most of the time you'll be able to do that, but that might come up where like you want to give the player who mulliganed to 2 1 extra card because the other player has a Rhystic and a Mystic out, and we got to do something about this. So
yeah,
you take a card and let's team up. Like, I think political aspects of this card are going to be relevant.
I think every Esper deck is going to play this.
Marnius.
Marnius is going to love this.
Marnius loves this fucking
right?
card.
We just said it's the best Esper deck, and now it's got another engine, another way to draw an additional card on everyone's turn.
Yeah, that's absolutely nutty. Yeah. So this is honestly, for right now, and I think throughout, this is my pick for like the best card of the set, which feels strange. I know it's not an auto include. It's not going to go in every deck.
Does
but
it go in blue farm? The only reason why I don't think
I don't
it
know.
Does is because it doesn't deal damage for Timna, but it's a consistent engine.
Time will tell if this is comparable to Lotho for real or only just in certain decks. Is it arguably the same as Lotho or maybe even better? Like in Marnius, in Sissei, I think this card is spectacular. In other decks, it'll feel closer like a Fairy Mastermind or something, I think, where like if your deck works with it well, it's good, but on its own, it's not great, you know?
I think that makes sense. Tivit still wants it, though.
Tivit still wants it. Anything that can make
more
mana,
treasures.
It'll
yeah.
feel like Arcane Signet. It'll feel like a talisman. If you're on the talismans that don't necessarily are able to tap right away unless you have the other mana, but next turn they will.
Signets, you mean. Yeah.
Signets is what I mean. Yeah. We'll see, but I think that's my pick for one of the best cards of the set.
Zach Fair is a white mana for an 0-1 legendary human soldier that enters with a +1/+1 counter, and for a mana, you can sacrifice Zach Fair to have target creature you control gain indestructible until end of turn, and put Zach's counters on that creature and attach an equipment that was attached to Zach to that creature.
This is another Sisse card that I'm not sure will actually see final play in Sisse. A
lot of legends in the set. A lot of stuff for Sisse. Yeah.
Yeah, this one's going to compete with Skrelv a lot. This one can activate right away. It doesn't have summoning sickness like Skrelv, but this only gives indestructible. And most of the interaction in CDH is not destroy target creature. It's a bounce spell, it's an exile, it's a dismember, it's a something that this isn't going to protect from. But the fact that Zach Fair can move that +1/+1 counter over to Sisse, that's neat.
A permanent extra boost to Sisse to find the stuff that you need could be helpful.
It basically allows you to keep the boost from Zach after you get rid of Zach, right? So like Zach gives the +1 to Sisse because it's a legend, and then if for some reason it goes away to protect something, either in combat or something like that, you can move the counter over.
Are you putting Zach in your list?
I don't think so.
Let's move on.
Yeah, right. I think it's close again, and I could be proven wrong, but I don't think so. I don't think that indestructible prevents against enough stuff.
And there's no equipment things. Like, it just has a lot of other words that are just too useless.
Yeah, I wanted it to be good. It looked really good at first glance, and the more I thought about, like, what does this actually protect against, it felt a little bit worse to me.
I know. Some of these cards I don't want to think about too much, because the more I think about them, the more I'm just going to go.
Maybe not.
Yeah, but...
Setzer, Wandering Gambler, is the next card we're talking about. One, a black and a red for a legendary creature, Human Rogue Pilot. It's a 2-2. It says, whenever Setzer enters, create the Blackjack, a legendary 3-3 colorless vehicle artifact token with flying and crew 2. Whenever a vehicle you control deals combat damage to a player, flip a coin. And whenever you win the flip of a coin, create 2 tapped treasure tokens.
So this is just a Krark Silas card?
Maybe, right? Like, is it? I don't know. The tapped part sucks ass. But whenever you win a coin flip, create 2 tapped treasures.
Here's what you do. If you are on a Magda version of Krark Silas, where you're using Magda to go get Bolas's Citadel,
yeah,
this is a card that you definitely add in, because the vehicle that it creates, it allows you to crew Magda without having to get Magda in, is going to let you successfully get way more treasures. You won't care about the tapped treasures that this one's making, because Magda's going to sacrifice them whether they're tapped or not, and you wouldn't be able to get mana out of them that way. Or not.
I wonder if this is like a red-black Krark deck with this as the commander and Krark in the 99, and then a bunch of coin flipping stuff in the 99. And whenever you flip a coin, you just make a like tap treasures.
I think bunch of coin flipping stuff is where you start to lose.
We
me
go,
a
wait,
bit.
Wait. Yeah,
because there, okay. where there's one good coin flipping card, it's Tavern Scoundrel. It does the same thing, but it's better.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably bad. Let's move on.
All right. The next one. Oh, God damn it. Oh, no. The Fire Crystal. This is 2/2 red for a legendary artifact that says, red spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Creatures you control have haste. And for 4/2 red, you can tap it to create a token that's a copy of Itali, and then sacrifice that token at the beginning of the next end step.
That's a chunky. We can move on now.
Yeah. I mean, given chunky haste isn't that good. Oh, hooray. I can make 2 6 mana Atalis. This feels not great. Let's move on.
Yeah. Torgal, a fine hound. I love this card.
A fine hound.
For 1 and a green, you get a legendary creature wolf 2/2 that says whenever you cast your first human creature spell each turn, that creature enters with an additional +1/+1 counter on it for each dog and or wolf you control, which Torgal is, and it says add 1 mana of any color.
Dude, not only is this good, you're going to tell me this is good for Sisse.
Of course.
But this is like the best Tovalar card you could have asked for.
Oh, God, for my casual werewolf
deck.
Have you
thought about
that?
Yes. How the first human that you cast, all of your humans are also wolves.
No, all my werewolves are humans is what it is. And I already name...
Oh, but it's dog and or wolf, not werewolf in particular.
But I do play some wolves, and I play a bunch of wolf tokens.
But that's
like wolf token
really
enablers.
Good. Yeah.
It's not like Lights Out Incredible in Tovalar, but it's certainly playable. It's a 2 mana Anorak in Tovlar that is a wolf that triggers all my wolf stuff that will allow stuff to get bigger. What this really does for CDH is in Sisay, it's pretty good. I think.
Noticed that we just completely left Bugenhagen at the wayside once this got spoiled.
Bugenhagen came out, and I was like, maybe a Sisay card. And it's like, oh, wait, a kind of strictly better one.
Yeah, actually can pump Sisay and be the mana dork that you were looking for.
This is pretty close to Ruby, a red-green card that allows you to tap for a red or green and has haste, and it's a legendary creature.
I know we were talking about Katilda the other week, too, which lets your humans tap for a mana of the color that they are. And I know you also just put that in your Sisay deck. Do you think that Torgal replaces either of those right now?
It definitely fits in the same area. It's one of those cards. I personally don't want to take out either of those cards, but it is nice that if you play the Torgal first, which you normally want to deploy the mana first, Torgal will kind of act as a two-color legend, just like the other ones do, because Sisay, a human, will enter with the +1/+1 counter, and that's surprisingly relevant in Sisay.
Yeah.
Having this add +2/+1 to Sisay combined, being it being a legend and then the counter, is particularly relevant. I've mentioned this before, but Sisay being able to find three drops is huge.
Yeah.
Being able to find Silvala and Tyvar and Derevi and any of these pieces that help you start your combo is particularly good. So I think that this one is certainly, I'm going to play it in Sisay. I'm going to try it out, but I don't think I take out either of those cards.
It's just a different card that gets replaced.
Yeah, take out something else.
That makes sense. Yeah, because what Katilda does is be your enduring vitality.
Kind of, right, which I actually just cut. I cut enduring vitality, weirdly enough.
Oh, because it's not a legend.
Because it's
Katilda,
not a legend.
Katilda is your enduring vitality.
Yeah.
And this is not enduring vitality in the same way. Like, this fixing your colors is not what enduring vitality was good for. Enduring vitality was good for letting your creatures tap for more mana that was helping you do stuff.
And Katilda, realistically, doesn't act that much like that. Katilda only acts like that for humans, and there's not a ton of humans in the deck. There's a few. It turns Sisay into the ability to do that. But Torgal being able to tap for any color, actually, I do think will be a little bit relevant because Sisay's five color. Like, I need to be able to make my pips, and Katilda only making green or white and only basically allowing for other things to make green or white because all of my other humans... Kinnan, I guess, is blue and human.
But that's also like you had those colors of mana.
Right.
It's not like you needed help finding that. Like, if you were missing red, this gets you red.
Bingo, which will be super relevant. So Torgal's definitely going to see play in Sisay, and then maybe some other. I don't think another deck would want. It's too specific for what Sisay wants.
Yeah.
You don't want this in Itali, right?
No, never.
Never.
Never. I want Bugenhagen before I want this.
Yeah. You don't want either of those cards.
Yeah.
Even like, especially like the Timnathras piles, this is just way too slow. And any reasonable CDH deck, way too slow. For Sisay in particular, very good.
So your other commander, Edgar Markov, found an omen path, apparently,
and has traveled to
the Final Fantasy plane, which, by the way, Final Fantasy is a really weird name for this plane. I don't know if you're following with the magic lore for this one, but the plane of Final Fantasy, what a dumb name.
Is that how it is?
No, I'm trying to make a joke.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to make a joke, yeah.
What does Edgar, King of Fiargo, do?
Figaro. Yeah.
Figaro.
Yeah, I know. He got into opera. This is 4/2 blue for a 4/5 legendary human artificer noble that when he enters lets you draw a card for each artifact you control.
What an insane line of text for a card to have.
Unban Academy, please.
Yeah.
Two-headed coin. The first time you flip one or more coins each turn, those coins come up heads and you win those flips. Wait a minute. This is a replacement effect, right?
The first time you flip a coin each turn, those coins come up heads and you win those flips. Yeah, yep.
So you have Krark in play.
Yes.
And then you cast a spell.
Yes.
And then Krark triggers.
Right.
You flip the coin and you're guaranteed to win that flip. You don't even have to flip.
The first one.
Because you only have Krark in play.
Right.
So. So then it just gives you two demonic tutors.
Yeah, sure. But you have to spend 6 mana on this card first, a 4/5 creature first. This card is so powerful, but so much mana. Like in a Krark deck, in any artifact deck, like an Urza deck, the effect is nuts. Draw a card. In a Tivit deck, can you imagine resolving this and drawing a card for each token you have? Holy shit, it's so powerful. But it's a 6-mana creature. Like, can that be good enough? I don't know. This is like
honestly,
pushing the bounds from like what I think is a good card. I really don't know.
Yeah, weirdly enough, the best place for it is Marnius. Because
Marnius
builds right now are focused on artifact
heavy
tokens. Like artifact tokens. Like War and Soul Trader making treasures. All these other cards that we talked about that make treasures today, like Lotho and Taru.
In Marnius specifically, there's a world where this could pretty easily make 15 to 20 draws, right?
I would think.
Do they keep that many tokens out realistically? Or like the tokens are mainly treasures, so they're using them as they go.
I guess it's true, and you're using a lot of treasures to get this to go away. But like Grim Hireling, if you hit each player, makes you the mana to cast Edgar.
In Christmas Land, this card's insane. It's 6 mana, which is the main thing that's holding it back, and I don't know if that's going to be allowed to be good enough in CDH, but there are certain decks that I'm thinking about it for
My
sure.
My take is going to be, realistically, this card will see zero play, but because it says cool things like draw a card for each artifact you control, and wow, Quark upside? Okay. I think like there's a reason to talk about it, but I think the longevity of this card does not exist.
Like, when it feels good, it's going to draw you 30 cards. When it feels bad,
You're going to love
that. Yeah, and when it feels bad, it's going to be in your hand, and you have 3 mana available to you, and this does nothing.
It sounds like I'm being really harsh against it, but like there's some really good stuff from this set that I'm like looking at everything really highly because of stuff like VV and Starting Town and Taru. Like there's a lot of good stuff that we're getting, so I'm allowed to be mean to
whatever you want. Yeah. The next card is one that I can talk about. I think it's my turn.
This is your turn.
The Gold Saucer, which I like. There's some food stuff in this set. It's a land town. It taps for a colorless. And for 2 and tapping it, you may flip a coin, 2 generic mana. Flip a coin. If you win the flip, create a treasure token. And for 3 and tapping it and sacrificing 2 artifacts, you draw a card.
So in your Edgar King of Figaro decks,
this will go great.
This will go great.
I realistically think this is a fine Quark card. I think there are enough cards that just like you flipping the coin will be a nice benefit. Like being able to flip a coin will be good.
Yeah, again, with Setzer or with Tavern Scoundrel, like you're making 3 treasures when you activate this.
It's a lot of mana to do these effects, so it makes it a little bit tricky to judge, and it's a colorless land, which are slots that are very tricky right now. There's a lot of other things that can fill these slots.
Yeah.
It would be something that I would be thinking about in a Quark deck. I don't know that I would land on it officially, but it would be something that I'd be looking to try.
I mean, 3 mana, tap it, sacrifice 2 artifacts, draw a card is also text.
Kind of interesting, yeah. You don't have to sacrifice it. You can do this over and over again as long as you have a stream of artifacts. Like, is this another Marnius card that this just, like, allows you to create a token, sacrifice the tokens for more value? It feels like it's going to end up being a casual card because it's just a little bit too much mana and a waste of land drop.
It has some other things that we like to do in CEDH sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's just move on.
Moving on.
Go-Go, Master of Mimicry, is 2 and a blue for a 2/4 legendary wizard. For X and X and tapping it, you can copy target activated or triggered ability you control X times. You may choose new targets for the copies, and this ability can't be copied and X can't be 0.
Yeah, so I don't know really what this one does yet, but I feel like it has a lot of good words. I think it might do something with Sisse, but I think overall it'll probably be a little bit more win-more-y than anything else, where like by the time that you can pay to do this, you should probably be able to win the game in another way anyway. But copying activated abilities twice is just interesting, so it's a card that I'm considering.
I feel like if there's a way that you can untap him, copy another activated ability that's letting him untap, I think like there has got to be some kind of a way that you can loop this. It's just going to be a little bit mana intensive because you need to not only copy something that untaps him, but copy something that makes you the mana to replace the mana that you use to activate the ability too. So I think that there's a lot of cool things that could go for this card. Like it's a wizard, so like it can copy Anala triggers, which could also be something that could be interesting, but I don't know that that's something that deck's looking for.
What about Brago? Doesn't Brago do something like this with like...
The problem is that if you blink this thing to have it come into play, now it has summoning sickness, so you can't reactivate its ability. So it's not like quite like a Astrionic Resonator in that way.
Yeah, but you can just like double up on the other stuff that your Brago is blinking.
You could
right?
still you double blink with it to make like a bunch more mana, trigger a bunch more other stuff. It's probably still not bad there.
Sounds like a casual card. Next card's not. Lewis sucks. I don't know. I don't know how to say this one.
I feel so bad for everyone named Lewis.
Lewis sucks. Sacrifice is a blue mana, an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a legendary creature or pay 2 mana. Counter target activated ability, triggered ability, or non-creature spell.
This card sucked up until you said or non-creature spell.
The fact that it says non-creature spell, I feel like makes it like maybe the first considerable stifle that we've ever seen. And we always, people, this is like a stifle. And I always think they're bad. This is the first one that I say, maybe.
But only for Rogrock decks, though.
And I don't even think it's good in Rog'Sai. I don't really want this in Rog'Sai. A 1 mana counterspell that I have to sacrifice my commander for, why not just play Swansong? I already cut Swansong. I don't want to stop your triggered ability. I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Man, is it only a Rog'Thras card?
I think it's considerable in Rog'Thras. Mainly, it's just an extra 1 mana counterspell that sometimes can counter an activated or triggered ability. But even still, I don't think you really want to sacrifice your Rog'Rock. You want to use it for other stuff. Like when Rog'Sai specifically,
true.
When I'm sacrificing Rog, it's to get mana. I want want to go up in mana normally when I get rid of Rog, or use Rog in play to cast a Fierce Guardianship or Deflecting Swipe.
I feel like Rog Thrass thrives on Rograk being in play instead of like getting sacrifice value off of them.
Something like Talion. I think Talion would love a card like this because you get to sack Talion when you want to, because sometimes you want to get rid of Talion, and then it's just another like efficient counter spell, which can be really helpful, and sometimes you want to stop activated or triggered abilities.
This is interesting in Talion because if you have Thoracle Consult on the stack and then they trigger Talion, you sack Talion and stop the trigger from happening too.
Yeah, or sack something else and sack something else and counter the Talion's trigger, or sack the Talion, counter the thing, and then now if they counter it over top of it, Talion will be there.
Exactly.
I've heard some Sisay pilots talking about it, using this as just like another one mana counter spell that can get rid of a legend you don't care about. I don't want to do that. That's not for me personally.
No, you want them in play because they're helping your game plan.
Yuriko is another one that I think Yuriko would love something like this.
Oh my god, this is so good.
Just get rid of the Yuriko. You can Command Jitsu in it again. There will be certainly CDH decks that can utilize this card for sure, I think. Sometimes it'll be one mana counter non-creature spell.
Derevi?
Maybe Derevi. Maybe. It's better than Swansong, and it's better than an offer you can't refuse if you have the thing to sacrifice. You just don't always have the thing to sacrifice.
In most decks, Swansong, an offer you can't refuse, and Flusterstorm are all going to be better than Lewis Sucks.
Right. But in some decks, Lewis Sucks will be equivalent to those cards. Maybe better.
Clip this and send it to your friend Lewis.
This is, I think, strangely, although we just talked about a couple places that it wouldn't work, due to the places that it would work, I still think this is probably one of the better cards of the set for CDH.
Where it's going to be good, it's going to be hella good. It's just not going to be good in most decks.
Right. Even, honestly, Timna Krom is the deck that I'd be more interested in, because a lot of times you don't really care about Timna. You played Timna because you didn't want to invest something better onto the battlefield, and then later when you win the game, all right, great, get rid of Timna. Now I have a one mana counterspell. That's going to be fine.
That deck plays a lot of legends. Ragavan, Delny, Bergy. Right?
Yeah.
Like there's
a couple extra ones.
A weird amount. I mean, a lot of cards you want to keep in play, but...
So I think this will certainly be a card that'll see play. This one, 2/2/2/2/2, and Starting Land.
Yeah, I think they're some of the best non-commanders.
Should we talk about another one mana blue card?
Magic Damper is what I am when I don't feel like playing the game. This is one blue mana for an instant. Target creature you control gets +1/+1 and gains hexproof until end of turn, and untap it.
This is a Stella Lee card.
Yeah, so it doesn't like draw you through your deck the way that a lot of the good Stella Lee cards that untap Stella do, but it at least lets you untap Stella Lee so that you can make an infinitely large Stella Lee.
I think this is Shore Up. This is exactly Shore Up.
This is exactly Shore Up.
And,
yeah.
And Shore Up, I think, already sees play in Stella.
Because having a huge fucking Stella is still great.
I have certainly thought about cards like this in Sisay to untap the Bloom Tender. Specifically, Legolas's Quick Reflexes. That card is so cracked in half. That untapper effect I am playing, but I'm not going to play another one like Magic Dumper Sisay. But if you're playing the Cowgirl, I think this card's great.
And the next card is also only great for one deck, too.
Eden, Seat of the Sanctum, is a land town that taps for a colorless mana. It has for 5, tap it, mill 2 cards, then you may sacrifice this land. The sacrificing the land is part of the resolution of the card. You don't even have to do it. When you do, return another target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand.
I was just thinking about Lumra.
Lumra. Oh, yeah.
Because it has a way to help fuel your graveyard a little bit more. You get it back into your graveyard. And if you end up milling over one of the engines that you need, like one of the lands coming to play on tap, like a Spelunking or something, you can get it back and then help you go through stuff a little bit better.
You already play Buried Ruin, which is for much cheaper investment, but only gets back artifacts.
Yeah, and this... costing so much mana to do. Like, it cost you a Lumra to do this. But I think because it mills you is the only other reason why I would consider it for Lumra, because running 53 lands is something that they can do.
And sometimes Lumra gets in a situation where they have a fucking 20 mana. They need the one piece that's already in their graveyard because Lumra milled it or something.
Yeah, like, oh man, if I could get this food chain back from my graveyard, I could, like, really get going. And
yeah,
then...
so I could certainly see that. A couple Lumra cards, it seems like we're getting this.
Weirdly enough, yeah, more good cards for Lumra than a Atali. What are we looking for?
Yeah, no good Atali cards really, right?
Every card that we've talked about over the past 3 weeks or 4 weeks for Atali has sucked ass.
Yeah, I don't think any good Rog'Sai ones either. I know that counterspell, but I think I stand by it. Don't think that's a Rog'Sai card.
All right, we got one more card to talk about.
Final card.
The Wandering Minstrel is our last card. This is a green and a blue for a 1/3 human bard. It's legendary. It says lands you control enter untapped. Aw, damn. This was almost a Lumra card again. It has the Minstrel.
Lumra in it.
Oh, yeah, put Lumra in it. The Minstrel's Ballad. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control five or more towns, I'm wasting everyone's time, create a 2/2 elemental creature token that's all colors. And for three, white, blue, black, red, and green, all other creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of towns you control.
Yeah, this doesn't do a lot, but what it does do is exists as a 2-mana legendary creature.
I thought you were just going to stop talking after you said exists.
It just exists. It's a 2-mana legendary creature that for commander purposes is all five colors.
It's an upgrade from Ezio and from Jensen Karthalion because your Mox Amber taps for better colors now.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why it's better than those other guys.
Surveil lands, but you're in five colors. Are you really playing Surveil lands?
I don't want to play,
you know, because they come in untapped.
I arguably want to play a couple more Surveil lands, yeah.
And then I'm wondering if you want to play the colorless Biseiju that says instance or sorcery, the one that you cast with it, is uncounterable. Maybe you want to play something like that. That card's pretty decent, but it comes in tapped.
Because he's 2-mana, I'm a little bit more interested in doing that, like getting to play some of these lands that do come into play tapped and have them play untapped. But I don't necessarily want to play like a ton of them.
But maybe one bounce land. I think you could play a bounce land. And have it just like it be like your, it's an untapped land source that bounces a land that secures you to have a land drop for next turn.
You can't do cracked things because it's not a trigger. They just enter untapped. So you don't have the ability to like, if you have this and like an Amulet of Vigor out, like you don't get multiple untaps or anything like that.
No, but with like Splendid Reclamation and other things that like put a bunch of lands into play all at once tapped. What's the other one that is the modern card?
Scape Shift.
These aren't CDH cards, right? But if those lands came into play tapped, they might look a little bit better. I still think no. Like we said before, it just existing as a five color legend that's 2-mana is close. Other commanders have been close before at just basically doing that. And this will make some lands really cracked. It'll allow you to do some silly broken things.
When you play against Ezio, you go, oh man, you're going to get to 10 and you're going to lose to the Ezio activation? Jensen Karthalion. Oh, you're going to play Bring the Light? Your deck sucks, right? So like at least this does like a little bit of extra things, is a little bit of like colors that you want to have. Like Jensen Karthalion, you never wanted to find white mana or like the white and green. These are colors you actively want to search up more often.
It makes your shock lands be dual lands. Because you can have them come in tap. Is that how it works?
How does this work?
How does that work, actually? Do you get to decide I would like to try to have my shockland enter tapped, or would it, hold on.
Yeah, how does this work? Because they enter, then you say, I would like to have it enter untapped, and then it just untaps?
Watery Grave says, as it comes into play, you may pay 2 life. If you don't, Watery Grave comes into play tapped instead. It's a replacement effect. Lands you control enter untapped. They're both replacement effects. They're both replacement effects trying to replace the same.
I don't think lands you control enter untapped is a replacement effect.
You don't think so?
There's not an instance of something that it's replacing.
The land coming into play tapped. What the card says? So it's not a replacement. It's just like a static ability. They just enter untapped.
Let's see. Oh, dude. I think you're right. Let's look at Spelunking. If a land has an ability that says it enters the battlefield tapped, you choose the order in which that ability's effect and Spelunking's effect apply. This means you can choose to have the land enter tapped or untapped. So what would happen here is with your shock land, you would first choose to not pay 2 life and have it be tapped, and then the Wandering Minstrel's ability to have it enter untap applies after that. So it's like trying to apply 2 clone effects to the same card. So you get to choose which one works.
Don't you choose which one, though?
They're both affecting, which is why it's not a replacement
it's
effect.
It's not an either or.
They have to like resolve in the order that you're doing them. So it acts as like 2 triggers where you get to choose the order that they resolve, but they're not triggers.
Sure.
Because they're enter the battlefield situations the way that clones are. So you have to make the choice.
Is it layers? Is this a layers thing? This feels maybe like a layers
thing. It could be more like a layers thing, yeah.
I don't know.
It can't be a layers thing because you're choosing. Because you could choose to say it enters untapped to the Wandering Minstrel, but now I'm going to say I don't want to pay 2 life, so now it's going to enter tapped because of the enter the battlefield clause replacement effect. Yeah, that's what this means to me.
That feels counterintuitive.
You choose the order in which the effects apply, yeah. If a land you control is simply put onto the battlefield tapped without a replacement effect being applied, it always enters untapped.
Okay.
If Spelunking would enter the battlefield at the same time as a land you control would enter the battlefield tapped, that land still enters the battlefield tapped. That doesn't matter. But yeah, so you can still choose for shock lands to have them untap and not pay life.
Great. That's not going to be super relevant. We have a couple of great cards from this set that are Final Fantasy cards. Tower 222 is really good, I think. Starting Town is probably going to see play in a chunk of decks.
Vivi is going to be a good commander.
Certainly, and possibly a great 99 card as well. And then Luisa Sux's The Counterspell is also probably going to be pretty playable, I think.
Some decks will play Luisa Sux's Sacrifice.
Yeah.
And a lot of decks won't care how much Luisa Sux.
Is that five good CDH cards? Plus a chunk of commanders that are like a bunch of like that are seem close to playable. Like Terra is a deck that I'm actually sleeving up personally that I'm super excited about. And the other commanders, I think like Celeste and Yshtola, I think are all probably playable too.
I mean, that doesn't even include cards for one-off commanders that are also getting like upgrades too. Like the bear that we've been talking about, Lumra and Stella Lee getting like cards specific to them. One of our local Rakdos players was saying he's thinking about Sephiroth because it does sacrifice creatures, but it could be an Obnixilus card because it pings too. So like there's even more stuff out there that I'm sure we didn't talk about today that could see CEDH play. So let us know in the comments below what other cards from the Final Fantasy set you're thinking about for your CEDH decks and why we're wrong about the cards that we talked about sucking today.
Thank you so much for watching. If you like Spurs directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Mr. Jerby, Ben Gillette, The Cardbook Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Eye, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Quaje, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Especially because Gay to Win merch is available everywhere, so check that out on Dragon Shield, Bonfire, and our website.
Follow us on social media for more content.
And thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time. John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajou, Sarcastic, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Justin Mansolo, Ace S, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Squink. Here I am. That's the sound that it makes. Squink.
Squink. Cool. You've been squink.
You've been squinked.
I just realized that all these cards tell you what Final Fantasy game they're from.